Welcome back. You're listening to Policy and Pino on Rhode Island Public Radio in concert with the beautiful Providence Athenaeum. I'm John Dankosky from the New England News Collaborative, and we're talking about sanctuary cities with the mayor of Providence, Jorge Elorza, Deborah Gonzalez from Roger Williams University, Leanne Senek, who is Rhode Island Republican National Committee woman, and Stephen Perry, who's Commissioner of Providence Public Safety. Commissioner, I want to go to you because I want to hear a little bit on the ground what it means to cooperate with immigration enforcement. How does it work? Explain that. If somebody comes to you and says, we have someone who we're interested in talking to, or you've arrested someone who we would like you to hold for a little longer, what does that look like?
So it all depends whether it's a criminal warrant or a detainer. So if ICE calls and says, we have a detainer on John Doe that you just picked up, then we tell ICE, well, you have 2 hours to come and pick John Doe up. Otherwise, he'll be presented to the court, and you have, you know, time to pick that person up at the court. We will not further hold. We will not arrest, and we will not take action on that detainer. Now, if there's a criminal warrant, we certainly will hold, and ICE needs to respond and pick that person up within a reasonable amount of time.
What's a reasonable amount of time?
I would say if we give them 4 to 6 hours, and they need to come. Now, it depends on the circumstances. Yeah. If it's a person that we don't have criminal charges on, then if they say, and it's a Saturday, we can't get there till Monday, then we're not holding because the liability is on us.
So does it concern you that someone could be let go who might very well do something then criminal in your city, and you'd be responsible for letting them go?
Sure, that always concerns us, but I can't predict the future of these folks and can't hold people, you know, indefinitely because I'm not sure what they're going to do in the future. You know, practically speaking, you know, we arrest thousands of people, and those people that we arrest are not here undocumented, don't have criminal deportation warrants on them. It's a very, very small number that we deal with. The thrust and focus now is to do these roundups, and the roundups can't be done without the resources of the state and particularly municipal governments. We refuse to do any roundups. That will have a huge negative impact on our relationship with the community. When I say roundups, that's going into schools, going into to manufacturers, going into shops and asking people what their immigration status is. As I mentioned, I've been with the city 6 years, and prior to that, I served 26 years in the state police. Immigration is complicated. We don't have the training, nor do we have the expertise, and it shouldn't be put on our backs to enforce those civil laws.
Do you know if ICE is coming to do a roundup on their own? If they're going to come into the city and try to make an enforcement action, do you know in advance?
Probably not. They probably will not, but we've been contacted by ICE, and there's communication there. They know that we're not going to provide resources, and we're pretty comfortable that they're not going to be doing any sweeps here either.
Leanne, I'm wondering if you might respond to some of this, because you were talking about what you would like to see the city doing versus what it is doing right now. What's your response to the commissioner?
Well, I think we have to look at it at a higher level. In the idea of we should be working towards fixing the immigration system, and that's something that this is very complicated. We're getting into the weeds, and people are talking about the legalities of everything, and I think we see more people reacting in an overreaching sort of way when they look at illegal immigration, and there is a lot of emotion involved, and because there's people, there's human issues there, and I think that by not addressing that, we're doing a terrible service to legal immigrants, illegal immigrants, and citizens. And that's what we should be talking about. And I'm glad that we're having this dialogue this evening. And I think that this is a good starting point. And we need to sit down and discuss this, because those people are being exploited that are coming here illegally. They're living in the shadows, and they're committing crimes just by being here, because they're using Social Security numbers that are not theirs. They're taking jobs from people. And the employers themselves need to be cracked down on. That's when you talk about going into the businesses and things like that. When we had the amnesty in the 80s, when Ronald Reagan was president, there was supposed to be a three-pronged approach. And we're supposed to enhance border security and then crack down on employers, and then the amnesty kicked in. Well, the amnesty kicked in. We let a lot of people stay in the country that had come here illegally, and they never followed up on the other two prongs of that. And that's something that we need to do. That's why I think enhancing the border, whether it's building a physical wall or just stopping people from coming across the border, putting in an entry and exit visa system that other countries do successfully, that when people overstay their visa, we should know that. We should have, you know, when you're in a foreign country and you have a visa to work or to go to school, about 3 months before you're ready to leave, they're contacting you and saying, do you have your plane ticket? Are you ready to go? But we don't follow up on that. We don't have a system in place for that.
And I just want, quickly, because I want the commissioner to jump in, but you're talking about a really comprehensive federal overhaul of immigration law.
Yes.
And I think that anybody who watches Washington on a regular basis knows that the chances of Washington coming up with a comprehensive immigration law, it's just not really all that possible. And I think that's for a lot of reasons. So now you have cities and states, municipalities looking at how they might, you know, make something that works for them at the local level, given the population, given the resources. Do you think it's wrong for a city to want to try to do something around immigration itself, given the fact that the feds can't do it?
I don't think that it's wrong, but I think that what we're seeing is that we're actually ending up pitting people against each other. And I think that you see a lot of people with negative connotations towards people who are here illegally. And that's fed into by the fact that we're not addressing the basic issue, that we don't have that system in place, and we're not looking at the part of the enforcement and all of those things. So that is just, again, when we talk about gender issues, minorities, all of those things, we seem to just keep putting people in silos and pitting them against each other. And that's why it's important that we have a panel and we start the discussion and we keep talking about it and get people in the community involved and see where we want to go as a community. Because it's not just about protecting certain elements of the population. It's about being responsible to the laws of the state, of the country, of the federal laws, all of those things, and creating a community that respects those laws where people are comfortable.
Do you feel like President Trump has played into some of that? Like he's helped to exacerbate some of that, putting people into silos you're talking about?
I think that there is some of that from both sides of the spectrum, both political sides. Absolutely.
Do you think President Trump has played into that?
I think to a certain degree he has, because he is talking about cracking down on illegal immigration. And the way that he's talking about it maybe isn't the way that people would like to have the conversation. It's not like we're sitting here in town halls having those discussions that we need to have within our communities. And it's very difficult to do that on the federal level as the president. You don't get to have a town hall. These things, when we talk about how it affects the community, is very important, because this is what we need to talk about and then be able to bring that to the next level, so that when I go to an RNC meeting, we can talk about what's happening in our communities and our states and bring that up to our people at the White House.
When you see him, could you invite him to the Province Athenaeum?
Because
this is really cool. This is the way we're supposed
really
to do
like
it, isn't it?
I mean, you had me at books, so.
Commissioner, I knew you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, that was going to be my point. Providence can't do a thing about this. Washington needs to, and it's been ignored for 20 and 30 years.
Right.
So the president should be introducing comprehensive immigration reform. And that's what we can start getting and changing our policies, not on the backs of local law enforcement.
Mayor, you have said, regardless of what you hear from Donald Trump, we have your back. That was the message that you had when people asked you about this. When you were first asked, though, about whether or not Providence was a sanctuary city, you said, no, we're not a sanctuary city. And later you said, we are a sanctuary city. Why did you change your mind on that designation?
Well, I didn't change my mind on that. But so it goes back to this 2013 Projo article. And, you know, they politifacted the question, is Providence a sanctuary city or not? They went through their analysis and found that Providence is not, I guess, technically, under whatever definition they use, a sanctuary city. So that's where that comes from. But, you know, I've always felt that we're a welcoming city. And, you know, I have nothing wrong with the term. Let's own the term. And what's been important for me, you know, especially since, you know, one side has indeed been pitted against the other, is to send a message of reassurance to our residents that, you know, that they're safe here, that in keeping with our values, in keeping with our principles and who we are as a city, that they should feel welcome here. So that's been, you know, that was the first message, reassurance. And, you know, then there have been threats from the federal government that, you know, they'll withhold federal funds from us. And, you know, just as anyone who's being threatened, you know, we lawyered up. So we've consulted with national attorneys. We have our local attorneys working on this as well. And, you know, I think that withholding federal funds for not enforcing federal law, I think that's patently unconstitutional, and the law is very clear in that. And these are also really strong principles of federalism. As Professor Gonzalez mentioned, there's the United States Constitution. You know, we're a government of enumerated powers. The federal government has those powers only if it's specifically listed in the Constitution, and if it's not, it's reserved for the several states. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear, there's no blurry line about this. Immigration law is for the federal government to enforce, not for the local government. And so there are strong federalism principles and long case law behind this that, you know, if the administration does try to withhold federal funds, we'll see them in court.
We'll talk about the legal piece of this in just a second, but what would it mean to the city? If federal funds are withheld from the city of Providence, what would that mean to you?
Again, I think that it's very unlikely because I think doing so would be illegal. But there's also very strong case law that says that if it does get to that point, they can only withhold funds that are appropriated for that particular policy. So say, for example, that the federal government is unhappy with that we're not enforcing immigration law. Because of that, they can't withhold Title I funds in our schools. It has to be directly related to what those funds were appropriated for. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, we get about $70 million from the federal government a year, but specifically to public safety, you know, if there's any silver lining in this, the federal dollars coming to this day have been declining for a long time.
Well, that's...
So we're talking about every year a smaller and smaller chunk.
Well, Professor Gonzalez, I'm not a lawyer. I just want to understand this. So the mayor says they couldn't withhold Title I funds for education, but they're educating maybe undocumented students in their schools. I mean, what are the limits of a law like this?
So I want to just touch briefly, if I may, on the executive order itself.
Yes.
So I don't read the executive order to mean that any federal funds that are already been earmarked for, you know, the city, that it's now going to get, it's going to stop, the city's going to stop receiving those federal funds because, you know, the mayor has now come out and said that Providence is a sanctuary city. So, but the implication of the executive order are for future grants, right, for future federal funds that could be coming down the pipeline. And the mayor's right. I mean, the Supreme Court's already ruled that the president has no authority over any funding whatsoever, right? I mean, under our Constitution, only Congress has authority over our purse strings, and only Congress can decide what kinds of funds they're going to be giving for certain programs. And the mayor is right, right? You cannot grant funding to a program and expect a conduct that is not related to that program. So, for example, you know, if the Providence Antheneum was receiving federal funding because it wants it to provide all of these fascinating books that are in here, and now they want the Antheneum to also report every undocumented person that walks in the door, they are not related conducts. One has nothing to do with the other, and the Supreme Courts have already said you cannot do that. The Supreme Court has also said that you cannot, that the Congress cannot coerce the city of Providence or any other organization from federal funding to do an act that's not related. So, for example, the court has said, well, you know, if you want federal funding, you have to put in that grant exactly what those funds are for. So if the funding for the Antheneum is to provide all of these fascinating books and make this building really beautiful and to enforce immigration laws, then as long as the Providence Antheneum knows that, then they should be able to receive those funds. But Supreme Court has said, well, You can't do that when the majority of the city's or the state's funding is coming from the feds. So, for example, the city of Providence, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mayor, as I understand it, receives at least 10% of its budget comes from the federal government. So if they were to stop that funding, that would be coercive towards the city of Providence, because now they need that funding in order for them to be able to move forward. And the Supreme Court has already said Congress cannot do that. Mm-hmm. So one more thing, if I can. So then the question becomes, and people say to me, well, Congress can do whatever they want, right? They can pass any laws they want because
in theory,
they're Congress.
Yeah.
Well, sure, right?
Yeah.
And so the answer to that is, no, they can't, right? We have the separation of powers. So you can't, under the laws, you can't have now states, you can't have states or municipalities now enforcing laws that have to be enforced by the federal government, mm-hmm. because our Constitution doesn't allow that. For example, policing is a state function, right? That is not a function that the federal government can enforce. Requiring the states to enforce immigration laws goes to policing and completely against our Constitution. Mm.
So, Commissioner, in terms of this piece of it, the threat to federal funding and what it means to public safety, obviously it sounds as though, from our other speakers, that there's not a lot of legal framework to be able to withhold funding, but, I mean, how much of a threat is that to you and the work that you have to do here?
Sure. We depend on, you know, federal government and the state government to fund various programs for public safety. But they're my two lawyers, so I'll defer to them and say, you know, that can't happen. And again, we shouldn't be threatened to do this or there are consequences. It's just not fundamentally right. And in our, you know, mission as local police officers to enforce these kinds of civil laws. We don't do it. We're not enforcing tax laws for a purpose. We're not trained. We don't have the expertise, and nor should we be enforcing immigration laws.
We just have a couple minutes in this segment left, Leanne, but I guess I'm wondering if you think that there's anything that the state can do in terms of what you're hoping is a remedy here. You're hoping that the city government follows through with federal orders. What's the role of the state government in Rhode Island?
Well, the state government, for one thing, can crack down on employers because they do have to report all of their wages to the state. So there is room there that they can perform audits. They can see who is working there. They're supposed to still check their immigration status. You're not supposed to hire people who are in the country illegally. They would not be able to work for those companies. So I think the biggest thing that the state can do is to look at it from the employment aspect and from the tax evasion aspect.
If you look at it from the employment aspect, though, and you start cracking down on people who hire undocumented workers, there would be a lot of empty restaurants and a lot of empty, you know, businesses across the state and the region and the nation, wouldn't there?
There probably would be, but it would be better for everyone if those employers were following the laws. Why would one employer get an advantage over an employer who is doing that, who is reporting that? Because we're talking about taxes that are not just paid by the employee, but they're paid by the employer as well. For Social Security, Medicare, FICA, those things, there's matching funds. So people who are gaining an unfair advantage because they're exploiting people for lower wages should not be able to do that. And that's something that the state, if we want to talk about protecting people and taking care of people, that's an aspect that we should be looking at, that people are being exploited because they're not getting the things paid into because their employers are paying them under the table or illegally or however that works, because I really don't understand how people can work that way. But we can look at it from that aspect, and I think that's something the state should be doing.
Our conversation is about sanctuary cities, and we're doing this here at the Providence Athenaeum. This is Policy and Pino on Rhode Island Public Radio. I'm John Dankosky. We'll be right back after this break.